standing by. Over.
Jeremy and Joe starts now
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Jeremy Branham and Joe George.
Hello, Houston. He's Joe. I'm Jeremy. We're Jeremy and Joe. Brian's hanging out with us as well. Busy show. We got lots to get to. We got some Houston Rocket preseason basketball. What is their saying this year? Is it liftoff again? Has it ever been that?
I think that was 2 years ago. Or maybe that was last year. No, I think it was last year.
So what is this year? Do we know?
No.
Swarm?
Nope.
Built for this?
Nope.
We are built for this.
What is that from?
That's from the Rocket. I mean, that's from the Astros video.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't know we had that in our repertoire. I didn't know that was in the chamber there, Brian. That was awesome. It looks like it might be all fire. I'm looking at their Twitter right now. They're using all fire, like on some of their graphics.
Okay.
But I don't see that hashtag. So it might be all fire, I guess. One preseason game in. All fire. I don't know if that really rolls off the tongue.
That's not good. That's not good.
Yeah, like their Twitter, what do you call the thing that's behind your profile picture? Your like headline or whatever?
The header?
What is that thing called?
The header?
The header? Their header says all fire. I think that's their saying this year. All fire. Are the Rockets all fire after preseason game number one? We'll get to that a little bit later. Rockets did win if you're betting on preseason. You know, I should have done that.
Oh, no. Shouldn't be doing that.
Why?
It's preseason.
I made big money betting on preseason NFL this year.
Well, yeah, I know you did, but it doesn't mean I would encourage that either.
I wonder if it's the same like philosophy, though. For those that don't know, I bet the underdog money line in every single preseason NFL game this year, and one was like 12 units. I wonder if that would apply to basketball, NBA specifically, because I don't bet on college sports. That's a lot of games, though. Yeah, I don't think I'm going to do that.
I mean, Bulls are plus 260 tonight against the Cavs.
See?
That's good odds.
Man, but did I start too late because there have already been preseason games? Well, I might just track this year and see how it does. And then if it's plus money, I might do it next year. But yeah, I mean, I did well in the NFL. But we'll get to that. Game balls as well. It is National Taco Day. Did you know that? Do you know I invented National Taco Day?
I've heard that before.
Yeah.
Acknowledge me!
So today's a very big deal in my household. I'll probably get La Panza Feliz for dinner. I'll probably get that a little bit later. But we'll cash them or trash them. Nick Caserio said a lot of stuff today. He didn't embarrass himself like, I don't know what drafting by need is.
Just keep asking good questions and don't ask dumb questions.
Yeah, Landry made him mad, though, so we'll get to that. Landry's making a lot of people mad over there. He made D'Amico mad with that MJ Stewart question the other day.
Uh-huh.
You know, what did you think of MJ Stewart filling in for CJ Gardner-Johnson? MJ Stewart doesn't fill in for anybody. Okay, D'Amico. All right, Cap. We'll listen to that a little bit later. Also get to Chiefs-Jags in a little bit. But I guess this is breaking news. Maybe. You be the judge. 713-780-3776. Brian McTaggart, 15 minutes ago. I'm a stickler on time. 15 minutes ago said that Astro GM Dana Brown, manager Joe Espada are both under contract for next year and will return in 2026. A source tells MLB.space.com any speculation about their futures can be put to rest. So I guess Dana Brown at least at minimum got his club option picked up.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm not too surprised that this is the news. I mean, I think at the end of the season, it definitely felt like a change was on the table based on even, I think, Dana Brown's comments in that postgame press conference weren't exactly like the postseason press conference weren't the most like encouraging in terms of how confident he was that everyone was going to be back. And we had the report that Joe Espada and everyone would be evaluated. But I'm not ultimately surprised that this is the end result that the Astros landed on. I'm not sure I agree with it. I do feel like they could have gone in a different direction, to be honest with you. But at the same time, they had a year with a ton of injuries, and that's ultimately why they didn't make the playoffs. But this is probably what we should have expected to see, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, we don't do half measures on this show, Joe. We don't do saddled right on the fence. Do you not like it, or do you like it?
I don't like it.
Okay.
I would prefer a new manager. I'm good with Dana Brown. I think Dana Brown's done some good things as the GM of the Houston Astros. But I think that when you look at what's happened with the Astros the last 2 years, you have Joe Espada, who, you know, started the season off last year with the worst imaginable start. They overcame it, which is impressive to say, you know, being down 10 games in the division. That's good. But then to end this season the way you started the previous season, just being a total disaster and missing the playoffs. And it wasn't just because of injuries. It's because your lineup didn't perform and your pitching wasn't as good as it needed to be at the backstretch of the season. I would have made a manager change. It feels like to me he's lost the clubhouse in a way. Clearly, wow. They don't agree.
Okay. I think if he would have lost the clubhouse, I think he would have been gone. I think there's enough alphas in that room that would have, you know, talked to Jim Crane. Like, I think Correa would have went up to Crane and be like, hey, man,
this
we need
working.
To make a change. Yeah, and look, I don't think either guy, we talked about this, I don't think either guy deserved to be fired. All the injuries that they had, excuses, I know, but it is reality. Like, if they stayed healthy, they're in the playoffs. They're probably one of the top two teams in the American League. So I don't think either guy deserved to be fired. The question that I would have is, do they instill confidence in you, in their positions? 713-780-3776. I don't think a manager's job, I don't want to phrase this because I don't want to like poo-poo on managers, because I do think managers are relevant, obviously. I think they're substantial. I think they matter. I do think that Major League Baseball managers, though, impact your win-loss record a lot less than NFL coaches or NBA coaches.
Agreed.
I think the biggest importance for a Major League Baseball managerial job is actually, you know, keeping the clubhouse in control. Like, you know, like making sure the clubhouse is good, that personalities are okay, that everybody's happy, that everybody's kind of, you know, on the same page. Like what they do managerially between the first inning and the ninth inning, that stuff's not that difficult. Let's be honest. Like we all know strategic moves. Like, do we differ on a couple of things throughout the course of a season? Yes, but that's pretty minute in the grand scheme of things. I think how they handle the clubhouse is the most important thing. And it's not like that I think Joe Espada is a top 10 manager. I think he's probably middle of the pack. But between the two guys, I think that Joe Espada is a better manager than I think Dana Brown is a general manager.
Why?
Dana Brown hasn't really done a whole lot that I'm like, yeah, this is great. Like, he came in, we're going to sign guys when they're young, and we're going to, you know, lock people up because that's how we did it in Atlanta. He did it with one guy. He did it with Christian Javier. Missed the boat on doing it with Jeremy Pena. He's got the scouting eye. Well, Jeremy Pena is 3 years. It doesn't warrant a contract extension. Well, you have the scouting eye. You should be the guy that's predicting the future better than any of us. And that's what the best GMs do, is they predict the future. They nail their evaluations. They nail their scouts. Why wasn't Jeremy Pena locked up? He was trying to get something done after a hot start, and then Payne's like, hold on a second, I'm going to go hire Boris and then just go ahead and put a, you know, a stake in that. That's not happening anymore. You know, we don't love Yiner. Yiner may be one of those guys. Like, if he takes off next year, this offseason would have been the time to do it. Maybe he does. Hunter Brown. They missed the boat on Hunter Brown. So, like, Dana Brown came in saying all that stuff and then didn't do it. He talks a lot. Not that that's really, like, tangible, but, like, we're going to get a left-handed bat. Never picks up a left-handed bat until the deadline. Left-handed bat that he picked up wasn't any good. And now he's talking about signing another left-handed bat and wasting all the money that they have under the CBT. The Kyle Tucker trade, I don't mind the Tucker trade. I like the Tucker trade. I'm not gonna front. I'm not going to trip on you. I like the Tucker trade. Now, how they handled Cam Smith? Eh. Christian Walker, $60 million, 3 years. Eh, I mean, I don't know what Dana Brown has done to inspire a lot of confidence in you. Like, he's picked up some middle relievers that are all right.
To me, it feels like he's worked within the constraints that he has from his owner, to be honest. I mean, I think Christian Walker's the one move that I would say is a bad one that Dana Brown has really made. And yeah, he overpromised a lot. Honestly, I kind of view it as he made promises and said he was going to do things that he frankly just is not allowed to do. They don't sign any of these guys to long-term deals, it feels like. There's a couple. You mentioned Javier. They signed Yordan early. They signed Bregman early.
No. He didn't sign Yordan early.
No, I'm just saying, like, as an organization. No, like,
I just want to be very clear that was not his move.
As an organization, like, they haven't really gone out and locked these guys up early. So has he tried?
I disagree. I mean, I disagree. Jose Altuve, Alex Bregman, Lance McCullers, Yordan Alvarez, Christian Javier. Like, you're not going to hit every single one of them. Like, that's almost half a dozen.
You're right, but there's also other, you know, there's Correa and Springer and Tucker and all these other guys that have walked.
You're not going to get them all done.
Yeah, I know, but, like, it's just not something they do. Like, they don't, I guess it's 50-50. I guess it's a little bit less than 50-50 because I probably have more guys on my side that walked away without getting the rookie contract extensions than guys that signed them. But I just don't know if Dana Brown even has the ability to do it because they don't spend money. Like they're not going above the CBT. So like, is he allowed to sign
that's
Jeremy
Payne?
That's
also untrue. He's went over the CBT the last 2 years.
Only for like big name players. Not for the little guys.
That's not what you said.
But like, it's only for like the big name guys. It's when he goes over. He's not going over when they extend Pena. So I don't even know if Dana Brown is allowed to do it.
Okay. Yeah. Like, I mean, I'm not privy to
those discussions. You're not wrong. Like, he made all those promises that he was going to lock up. He named all the guys you named by name. He said Kyle Tucker is going to be an Astro. Yes. He said Alex Bregman's going to be an Astro. He's talked about Hunter Brown. I don't think he said that about Jeremy Pena, but maybe he has. He hasn't followed through with any of that stuff. Look, so I get your point of like why there's not confidence in it. But to me, he's done enough in the margins that I see where he can be a good GM for the Astros. The big one I only really hold against him is Christian Walker. That move's awful. That's his biggest swing, though.
Like, that's the thing. Like, you can't say, I mean, I guess you can't say that, like, that's the only thing you're going to hold against him, but it's his biggest swing. I think that mostly given full control of this team up to the competitive balance tax, and then, okay, if we're going to have, you know, go over, let's have a conversation, which is not unnormal. Like, that's something that every owner does for the most part. So I don't think that that's crazy. I don't think he's built a great squad. Like the last two seasons too, like you see like the roster at the beginning of the year, you're like, why didn't you add more depth to this team? Like, why don't you have a couple of guys on your bench who are pretty good? In each of the last two deadlines, like, okay, we got to shore up our bench. Why not do that in the offseason?
Yeah.
And I understand you had the injuries this year, so that threw a wrinkle in the whole thing. But at the beginning of the season, you weren't like, yeah, this is a complete team. Also, like, I mean, you can even throw the Josh Hader contract into this, too. Josh Hader, first year was kind of so-so. This last year was really good up until the injury, obviously. I don't believe in big money, especially for that term, that long term for relievers. I just fundamentally don't believe in that. So, I mean, that's $18 million. Christian Walker's 20. So he had almost $40 million at his disposal, and he spent it on a first baseman who was below average this year. And then last year he spent it on a back-of-the-rotation reliever who wasn't good in his first season. Like, I don't think that he has really done a great job building the roster. I just don't. Like, I don't have faith in him either to build this complete team. And part of it was the end-of-season press conference or whatever, because the Astros are going to have somewhere around $30 million to spend in free agency. The first thing he mentions is a left-handed bat.
He's talking about that for 3 years now.
Like, that's not priority number one here, Dana Brown. You have a couple of left-handed bats. We don't love them. Jesus Sanchez, but he's a 775 career OPS against righties. Like, that plays. Zach Cole, small sample. Can he sustain that over his whole career? Who knows? But if I have $30 million to spend, you know, I'm not spending $20 million of it on a left-handed bat when I need pitching. So he just doesn't give me the faith of like, okay, he's going to build this roster that's going to be super competitive. You know who did do that? Jeff Luhnow and James Click.
Yeah, I think if they would have moved on from both of them, I would have been fine with it, Jeremy, honestly. The result here is not surprising to me, but I would have been open to moving on from both these guys and starting new. Because I think that for Dana Brown, the question is when you talk about confidence, is as this team goes in the direction they're heading right now, is do you believe in him to rebuild the Houston Astros and to rebuild them to where they can stay competitive the whole time? Well, that's not something really Atlanta ever really did. Like, he doesn't have anything in his track record to your point to point to those signs. And he's been talking about the left-handed bat, and he's been talking about starting pitching for 3 years now, and he never adds to it. And he adds guys that are typically rentals, like you say Kikuchi. He traded for Kikuchi because it was so important at the deadline last year, and then he didn't even replace him. So I don't quite understand those moves either. I would have preferred, honestly, both of them to be gone, but yeah. I probably would have picked the spot up. Maybe I'm nitpicking here, but it's the corny stuff that like I just – from my perspective, I can't imagine that goes over well. The Cam Smith stuff, the way they announced the All-Stars. I thought it was all weird. I thought it was all cheesy. I couldn't imagine playing for a guy like that if I was a professional athlete, so that's why I'm kind of anti-Espada. But I would have moved on from both of them. But that's not what they're doing.
Hey, look, to be completely fair, I would have too. Like, we're arguing the margin here. Like, generally speaking, I think we both move on from the tandem and bring in a completely new duo. just which of the two would I rather be replaced? And part of it's because I think the general manager is the most important part, like the most important position of an organization. Like the general manager is so critical. It is so important. So I'd rather have a middle-of-the-pack manager than a middle-of-the-pack general manager. Because I can get by with a middle-of-the-pack manager. You have a middle-of-the-pack general manager, it's going to hurt you this year. It's going to hurt you in 3 years. It's going to hurt you in 10 years. That's how critical that position is. So that's probably why I have that thought. He just doesn't inspire a whole lot of confidence in me. He seems kind of average.
Yeah, my biggest hope now is that we don't hear anything about extensions for these guys. You know, if Dana Brown, his option gets picked up,
yeah,
it better be a lame duck year for him. There should not be an extension handed out until after next season is over. You know, even if they have a really good regular season, because the way we saw this one end, you can't extend him in the middle of the year. You have to let the entirety of 2026 play out before you make a contract decision about Dana Brown. That would be a huge mistake to, in this moment now, say, yes, this is someone we want to sign for another 4 years or however long a GM contract is going to be. That is the one thing that can't be the follow-up to the story.
No. I trust Crane that he wouldn't do it because he fired a general manager who won a World Series.
Yeah.
So I trust he wouldn't extend him. And also, like, what's the demand? Like, is there demand in baseball for Dana Brown? No. Is there demand in baseball for Joe Espada? No. So, yeah, absolutely don't extend him. Next year needs to be make or break for both guys. I agree. 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line. We're on TikTok at ESPN 975. Joe's at Joe George Radio there. I'm at Jeremy Branham. We're also on YouTube at ESPN Houston. You can find us there. On Twitter at ESPN 975. Joe's at Joe George Radio. Brian's at Sack by BMAC. I'm at Jeremy Branham. Dana Brown, Joe Espada, they will be returning to their posts next year, according to Brian McTaggart. Go Cougs. He's the best beat writer in the Houston Astros have. Do those two guys instill confidence in you? Not McTaggart. We know he instills confidence in us. Dana Brown, Joe Espada, do they instill the confidence in you to be at their post next season? 713-780-3776. Jeremy and Joe, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Some might really like those two guys. Some might not like those two guys at all and are a little hot and bothered, a little troubled even, that those two guys will be guiding your favorite baseball team next season. You know what the perfect recipe is to forget those troubles? Two Creeks Crossing Resort on Lake Livingston. Forget the troubles of your general manager and manager by getting out there. Escape the rat race. Escape the hustle and bustle. Whatever is causing you stress and anxiety. Maybe it's that news. Maybe it's the job. Maybe it's traffic. You just want to get away. Well, get away to Two Creeks Crossing Resort on Lake Livingston. Escape the city. Enjoy the relaxing outdoors. TwoCreeksResort.com. TwoCreeksCrossingResort.com to book that stay now. From the open green spaces, wildlife you just don't see in the loop, beautiful, majestic trees, and some of the best fishing in Texas. The Two Creeks, Cash and Release Pond right there in the middle of the property. You can't beat it. It's just 90 minutes from Houston, too. You can escape the city without going too far at Two Creeks Crossing Resort on Lake Livingston. Hike their 92 acres worth of property. Kayak their water. Pickleball on their pickleball court. Swim in their pool or have a drink just outside of the pool. Stay in the glamping, the cabins, the tree houses. Branham family did the tree houses. Branham kids loved it. Or if you already have an RV, just pull up that bad boy. They have the perfect stay for anyone. And right now, you can get 20% off through October. They're always taking care of you out there at Two Creeks Crossing Resort. They love to take care of their visitors. Look, we're down here in the South. They care about hospitality. Take this weekend, for instance, Frozen Friday. On Friday, of course, they get a little outdoor family movie. They even have a fall festival this Friday. Stuff for the kiddos on Saturday. Kids craft, little kids activity. Live music. Who doesn't love a little live music? And you can also watch college football at Swampers, so you're not going to miss a snap. Book your stay now at TwoCreeksCrossingResort.com. That's TwoCreeksCrossingResort.com.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
This is Jeremy and Joe
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Jeremy Branham and Joe George.
Dude, Dana Brown, Joe Espada, they'll be back next season instill confidence that they can turn around the Houston Astros after missing the playoffs for the first time since 2016. Key from L.A., it's fair to say that the Astros have been the Angels' daddy. I have to give my love to the city of Houston. Thank you for doing that, Key from L.A. That's very big of you to do that. Ham in the junkyard, or honey glaze in the junkyard, whatever you want to call them. When is the right time to forgive A.J. Hinch for blowing that 19 World Series, the best Astro team ever, bringing Uncle Mike hitting coach a machete, coach for the backstops? I mean, it seems like that's not going to happen.
I mean, I think most people have forgiven AJ
at this point. I would say I think most is a good way to put that.
When we brought up his name up,
speak for yourself.
When we brought his name up 2 weeks ago, people were excited about the idea of AJ coming back. That seems to be some level of forgiveness.
There is a small population of people who do have a disdain for him and probably forever will.
I don't blame them, but most people are also okay with him coming back as the manager if it was an option.
I think you can not forgive him for that mistake, but still want him back because he's better than Espada.
That's fair.
That's where I'm at.
No, we always look to you, Brian, for logic, and you just brought it. That's a good call. Junkie on the text line.
I'm good with Machete coming back.
As what?
The bench coach.
I don't know. Why?
Why not?
Because backup catchers are good managers. I don't.
Zosmus has been great as a manager.
Why?
I'm fine with it.
Because he could, like, why though? Like, what? Why? What do you see in Martin that you're like, yeah?
I want the guy's bench coach. I see leadership.
Okay.
I see someone that knows how to scout a pitching staff.
Like the pitching staff isn't the problem.
No, I know, but he knows his own guys, so it would only make it better in theory.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, a lot of people think the pitching didn't really drop off after he left.
I don't have any issue
with Omar Lopez. Though.
Yeah, I'm not demanding it, but I'm just not. I'm open to it. If there was a job open, Machete could fill it.
Wade on the YouTube, I'm fine with both being back. Can't control injuries. I will be shaking my head, though, if they don't make changes from a batting coach standpoint. See, those to me are like the one non-negotiable I have, like 713-780-ESPN. What is a non-negotiable for this Astros offseason for you? The one that I have is the training staff. Like, if you don't replace the training staff, then you're just okay with incompetence. Like, you are fine with incompetence. And what does that say about you?
That the organization's okay with it?
Yeah, you're just going to be like, they're incompetent. Like, I'm not going to throw out any names, but maybe some people have, you know, they know where the skeletons are at the dike.
I still can't imagine Jim Crane being okay with that.
But he was last offseason.
I know, but like.
That's the guy I'm talking to. Jim Crane, replace your medical staff.
And it hasn't even really been last offseason. I mean, James Click went on the record before he got canned that they were going to reevaluate their return to play process the year they won the World Series.
Yep.
They clearly haven't evaluated it.
That's why they fired him, probably, because they didn't want to rock the nest. They didn't want to rock it with some people that they had there that know where the bodies are buried. Why do you think they took out Towels Hill? What do you think was under there? Bodies. That's how the medical staff continues to have a job here. The hitting. I don't really have. I mean, I guess the batting coach, the hitting coach, Snitker, Cintron. I guess I'm on the side of replacing them.
I mean,
I'm not like that's not a non-negotiable for me. If they came back, I wouldn't be like up in arms.
Okay, so here because there's really two sides of this. There's the Yiner side, where Yiner isn't improving, but how do you explain Jeremy Pena?
Like Carlos Correa taught him a new stance.
Does Carlos Correa deserve all the credit? Like, is Michael Brantley the reason why Kyle Tucker had success here? Like, what's the reason why guys we've seen struggle make improvements? Why did Jake Myers improve this year? I think he was much better at the plate this year than he was in previous years. So does the good there outweigh what is the perceived negative elsewhere, or is Yiner broken? Like can Yiner's chase rate be fixed? Because Jeremy Pena's chase rate wasn't totally fixed. It was improved, but it wasn't as good as people want it to be. You know, it's not the hitting coaches that Altuve swinging out things, you know, 3 feet outside the zone now. So it's they can talk about a new approach like they've been talking about for 3 years now, but I'm not sure new hitting coaches fix it. I would like to see the change because at some point, like, I think someone should take responsibility for what's happening. Same thing with the medical staff. that we're seeing this lineup struggle at home in the way that they have since they complained about the batter's eye, that we've seen this team, you know, not improve in certain areas like chase rate. I think a new voice would be valuable to this roster, but I'm not going to, you know, die on that hill that they have to make a change.
Towsville, sorry.
713-780-ESPN.
What is the one thing that must change? Now that we know, according to Brian McTaggart, and McTaggart don't miss, now that we know Joe Espada is for sure back, which we were already pretty confident in that. Now that we know that Dana Brown is for sure back, which we were already pretty confident on that. Now that we know those two are in place, for sure, in 2026, what is the one thing that must change? 713-780-3776. Jeremy and Joe, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. The one thing that you need to change in your lifestyle is you need to play more basketball. And you know what else you need if you're going to play more basketball? You need a goal from Pro Dunk. Don't go get one at the big box stores. Those are not good. They're cheap. You know what they say? Whenever you go cheap, you have to pay twice. You don't have to do all that. All you have to do is get a goal from Pro Dunk. Best basketball goals you will ever find. Tempered glass backboard gives you that true, sincere, authentic feel like the pro gyms, like the college gyms. It's got a breakaway rim, which is awesome, which is going to come into play, and I'll tell you why in a minute. Stainless steel hardware, and it's in Houston, so it has to be rust-proof, but it is. It is rust-proof. And it's height adjustable. That's where the breakaway rim comes into play. You can lower that bad boy down to 5 feet. You can raise it up to 10 feet to work on your shot. Or maybe you got a kiddo who's working on his game. But that breakaway rim's gonna keep you safe. You can dunk on it. You can hang on it. Gonna keep you safe. Their accessories, fantastic. Next level, top shelf. LED light kits for night play. You want to play at night? We'll get LED light kits and you can. Backstop nets. You don't want to waste your time chasing after the basketball. That's practical. Get a backstop net. That works. Pull pad lettering too. You can customize it however you want. And lots more. And you can order all of this stuff, including professional installation online at produnk.com. That's right. They will come out to your place, professionally install your goal at the perfect height, perfectly straight, perfectly level. You don't install. You're not going to screw it up because the pros at Pro Dunk are going to do that work for you. And right now, if you call Pro Dunk and mention hearing this ad on ESPN, you're going to receive the Lightning Adjust Drill powered height adjustment feature for free. It's easy to do. It's fun to do. It's a $249 value, and you're getting it for free. And you're getting this sucker installed for free, too. Helps you raise and lower the goal 10 times faster with zero effort. So take advantage of this now. 281-351-9822. 281-351-9822. And as always, visit them online. ProDunk.com. That's ProDunk.com.
The best in Houston sports talk is ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. This is Jeremy and Joe
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Jeremy Branham and Joe George.
He's Joe, I'm Jeremy. We're Jeremy and Joe. With Dana Brown and Joe Espada officially back, what's the one thing that must change in the offseason? 713-780-3776. What is it for you, Joe?
You can't just replace Fromber with the status quo. You can't just do what you've been doing in this organization, which has worked really well for them up until this point, of just replacing guys with, you know, veterans who don't make a lot of money or guys internally. You have to make a big move this offseason to replace Framber Valdez. And because it's not just replacing Framber, it's also setting yourself up for success to have your number one starter for when Hunter Brown is no longer here either. You can't just run it out with this group you have here. And plus, you need depth anyways at the starting pitching position with the amount of injuries they have. We know Luis Garcia has already had his second Tommy John, and his probably career as a member of the Astros is over. All those, like, all the injuries that have happened with Blanco and Wisniewski and these other guys who you can't really trust anyways, you have to replace Framber Valdez. And I don't think it's bringing Framber back, even though we kind of set up, you know, I think we said, like, what, 3 years, $100 million? You kind of backed me into a corner, saying I was okay with that.
Backed me into a corner. I asked you a simple question.
But you have to replace Fromber.
Gaslight me.
That's the number one thing that has to change this offseason. You have to change your approach in the way you approach the free agency / trade market this offseason. You can't just get a guy. You have to get a dude to come in and be part of this rotation.
That's tough.
I know it's a big ask, but like, what are you going to roll out, Jason Alexander? as your number two starter.
Yeah, you're talking about opposite ends of the spectrum here. Like, saying that it's tough to find a dude doesn't mean that Jason Alexander's your number two. I mean, you could sign a $20 million one-year contract kind of guy. You know what I mean? Like, it's not – that's a massive gap there. You're talking about the polar opposites. Because I'm with you. Like, I want at least one starter, maybe two. Now, I don't know if I need a dude per se. I mean, that would be nice, but how are you going to get a dude? There's not going to be a dude in free agency. The best starter in free agency is probably going to be Framber Valdez, which, I mean, I would kick those tires. I'm not opposed to bringing Framber back within reason. I mean, 103, 124, something like that. I'm not going to go beyond 4 years. And even I would be uncomfortable with both of those contracts, but I have to be a little bit uncomfortable to bring somebody like that in. I mean, the only other way you're trading for a dude is, I mean, you're putting together a really, really good package, which that's going to be difficult to do.
Yeah, they don't really have that either. You know, like even like Sandy Alcantara is a name that was, you know, floated around the deadline, but he didn't get moved because he was having a down season.
Yeah.
So they're, that, you know, the Marlins are waiting till the offseason to where his value is at its best this year. I mean, I would look at, Ranger Suarez, I think to me is the most obvious option outside of Framber. That's going to be, you know, an option this free agency period. You could look at the Dylan Cease thing. I'm not sure how I feel about Cease. I think I would trust the Astros if they thought he has the stuff to help him improve. But he's been kind of a roller coaster at times, so I wouldn't love Cease as much. But yeah, Suarez would be the guy that I would be targeting this offseason.
And he's going to be expensive and probably going to cost a contract that the Astros have never signed before.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, the reality of that is probably low. See, I'm okay with going, like, this is not a dude, per se, because I don't think you can get a dude. I really don't. I would be good if they signed a project free agent. Like, okay, I like this guy's stuff a lot. I'm willing to give him a 1-2 year contract, even if I have to pay him $15, $17 million, something like that. Like, who was a guy who signed like that? Like, Cease. Like, Cease was on a – well, I guess Cease was brought over. Like, I can't think of an apples-to-apples comparison to last year. Like a Manaea a couple of years ago where he signed, like, a prove-it deal where it's like, his stuff is really good. He's had some injuries. Like, if we could get him healthy and get him pitching, like, how we want him to pitch, that he could put together a solid season. So I would like one project starter in free agency, 1-2 year deal maximum, and even if you have to pay $15 million, that's the price of poker these days. And then I like the idea of trading for an inning eater, or like even Chris Bassett. Like, Bassett's like a guy who is going to throw 170 innings, and he's going to have a 3.75 ERA, and he might not even start a playoff game for you. Like, the Toronto Blue Jays left him off the roster, but that's valuable in the regular season.
Mm-hmm.
You give me 175 innings with a sub-4 ERA. Okay, that's very helpful. So, like, Bassett's going to be a free agent. Like, I wouldn't mind that 1-2 year contract. Project starter who you hope has a high ceiling, 1-2 year contract. Sonny Gray's a guy who the Cardinals are going to try to trade. He'd be more the Bassett mold, where he's kind of an aging veteran. He's solid. He's going to pitch you 5-6 innings, keep you in the game, eat up 170 innings for a year. So I want the project arm, and I want the steady arm. That's really what I want.
Yeah, that makes sense. Would you take a flyer on any of the older guys that are out there?
I mean, Bassett's in his late 30s. Sonny Gray's going to be in his late 30s.
Yeah.
Who did you mean?
Verlander, Scherzer.
See, if Verlander is your, like, you know, your veteran arm that's going to eat innings, I'm okay with that. But I don't want him to be the only starter you go after.
100%.
Like, I need a high-level potential arm. Doesn't even have to be in great form. You know what I mean? Like, this is a guy that we think we can get the most out of. Kind of like Yusei Kikuchi when you traded for him. Like, wasn't having good seasons. You trade for him, fix him, boom. Like, that type of project. And then I want a guy who's reliable. Like a reliable, and I'm not talking about elite. I'm talking about a reliable middle of the rotation guy that's going to give me 170 innings and have a 4 ERA. Mm-hmm. That's not crazy. That's not a high ask.
No, and Haas, I would even like to see the Astros go for a third pitcher. Like,
starters would be tough.
I know, but well, the last one I want you to take a low level cost, big swing kind of move where, like, Dustin May would be someone that, okay. He's going to be unrestricted free agent. He has not pitched very well recently. But when he first came up, he was a monster for the Dodgers. Someone like that. Like bring him
that's
in.
The project.
Who's not going to cost you more than, like, probably like $6 million. Like, I can't imagine he has any value at this point. He got traded from a team that's probably going to win the World Series.
What's his health like, though? Like, I don't want a guy whose arm is falling off.
Well, yeah. You remember his injury? Wasn't his first injury?
I don't remember his injury.
His first injury, he, like, choked on, like, steak, right? Or, like, salad, and he, like, cut his throat. Like, he, like, cut his esophagus. I think it was. I think it was something, like, very strange.
He's got jugular soreness?
I swear. It was not.
Jugular discomfort?
It was a weird one.
I don't remember that.
But, like, that's the
he
kind
looks of... like my friend Screech, though.
Oh, that's not... I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
For who?
Either one. Probably Screech, I would imagine.
I think Dustin May's very handsome.
Yeah?
Yeah, I think he's a good-looking guy.
Okay.
Good-looking guy. No, I mean, again, the Astros have a good track record of finding these potential arms. Potential arm, steady arm, cool. Let's ride. The Astros already have a project starter in McCullers. No, they don't. Lance McCullers is not a project starter. Anything that he gets you is a bonus. You're not going into next season with any idea of Lance McCullers. Corey says, what about a flyer on Walker Buehler? Walker Buehler has the same arm trouble that Lance McCullers has. Boston DFA'd him. Like, no. I don't want a dude who his elbow is hanging by a thread. I think Walker Buehler and Lance McCullers are the only two active pitchers that have had multiple Tommy Johns and a flexor tendon. Yeah. I don't need another Lance McCullers.
Yeah, if you wanted Walker Buehler, you could have got him when Boston DFA'd him. Mm-hmm. You could have brought him in that moment and be like, hey, let's see what this guy's got for the rest of the season. And maybe he's someone we want to keep in the offseason. But they didn't do that. So I think Walker Buehler is a no. He's an easy no for me.
I wanted Alek Manoah whenever the Blue Jays waived him. Just for like, hey, bring him in, spring training, let's see what we got, cheap. If he doesn't have anything left, we'll just get rid of him whenever we, you know, cut the roster down to 26. But he never made it to the Astros. The Braves picked him up off of waivers.
Is he still in the league?
He was able to return. I think he had Tommy John. He returned. He pitched in the minors this year. His numbers were actually pretty good. Pretty good numbers in the minors. And then the Blue Jays late in the year DFA'd him. And I was like, man, I wonder if the Astros might think about doing this just as a project arm looking ahead to next year. But the Braves picked him up. And, of course, the Braves had a higher waiver claim than the Astros did. Like, hey, no risk, all reward. Yeah. If he's no good, you cut him. They're like, you know, wash your hands of him, no big deal. What is Cease's value? I think he's a dude when healthy. I don't really know. I haven't seen any of these projected free agent salaries. But I imagine he's going to get, you know, $100 million 4 years, right?
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, Spotrac has him at $26 million is his projected value.
Value? Oh, they already have projections out there?
Yeah.
Okay, look at that for tomorrow.
Fromber's the highest.
What's his projection?
31, I think.
How many years? Did it have years?
No, just his market value, AAV. Oh, $33 million for Fromber.
Yeah, I mean, it's about right.
Yeah, Cease, they got 26.4. Ranger Suarez, they have 26.9.
Yeah, I'll have to take a look at that and tell you guys who I like. Would you bring back Morton? I wouldn't. Morton's washed.
No. That was kind of a retirement start for him, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think he might retire. I know he's on the older side, but I'll be fine if we signed a year for Bassett. See, Bassett would be the reliable arm back in my rotation that I think would do wonders. Like, he's not going to light the world on fire, but he's going to be a reliable guy back in the rotation, and every single time he starts, he's going to get you into the fifth, sixth inning, and you're going to be in the game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you wouldn't take that after we saw what we saw the last half of the year? Of course you would.
Yeah,
of course you would take it.
Someone that can just even just help limit your bullpen usage at the back end of the season would be very nice. Like, yeah, an innings eater is something they need. Because while Fromber had his moments, he did eat a lot of innings for the Astros.
No doubt. Like, He's a workhorse, man.
That's a lot of innings you have to replace with him leaving this rotation. Like, if you go with someone that is spotty and has some health issues potentially, you're just going to make your starting stuff, your starting rotation even more challenged. That's why with you, like, you can't just add one guy.
No, but I don't have faith in them. Trade Yordan for a dude at pitcher. No, his value is also very low right now. Hader, Yiner, Walker, Myers, and prospects all have to be in consideration for trades for starters and bullpen arms. Yeah, I mean, I think everything's on the table. A spot in the coaching staff need to grow a pair. Lead a game plan to get past the starter we are playing, working the count to elevate the pitch count and not swinging at the first pitch so much. Yeah, I think that's a fair take.
What about Hader, though? That you feel like you kind of breezed by that one.
Yeah, I just didn't really take it seriously. I don't know how many people are trading for Hader's contract after he didn't finish the season with an injury.
Mm-hmm.
So he's automatically going to have lower value than he would if he never got hurt. But no, I don't love Hader's contract. I like Hader the pitcher. I don't like Hader's contract.
Yeah, teams are so desperate for closers, man. Like, I wonder if you put that out in the open market, what the calls you got back would be like.
See, I'm not opposed to it. I don't hate it. Now, I would preferably like to maybe sign Brian Abreu to a 4 or 5 year contract before you do that.
I think those are tandem moves, right? You can't just move on if you decided to make your big splash this offseason is to, Josh Hader gets moved, like you moved Kyle Tucker. You have to have a backup plan, and Abreu has to be locked up if that were the path you chose to go down.
Yeah, like I don't hate that. I really don't. I don't hate it. I like Hader the pitcher, and Brian King would be devastated. Who would he go hunt turkeys with? Brian Abreu was at the Rockets game yesterday, and he was sitting behind the bench, first row, like he was an assistant coach. Like I think he was in the team huddle during timeouts. It was pretty funny. Verlander's coming back. Crane won't be able to resist. I don't think so. I think he's going to stay in San Fran. Training staff, says a junkie. Whoever's in control of arm care, fire them. See, I actually differ on that. Like, one, I don't think that the Astros are unusual in pitcher injuries. I think that's just baseball in 2025. And then what's the trade-off? You have a bunch of Jason Alexanders on your pitching staff?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think you have to just understand that with velo and spin, which is going to get outs and lead to a lower ERA, is going to also lead to more Tommy Johns. And, like, I think you just have to deal with that.
Yeah, I think that would be a mistake. If I'm open to it, but the reason why I think it'd be a mistake is because I feel like if you sign Verlander, it's the move, right? Like I don't trust them to do Verlander and someone else. And if it's Verlander or a different starting pitcher, if they're only going to bring in one guy, I probably want the other guy.
Yeah,
I just don't think Verlander is the second move that this front office would make.
I don't mind Verlander as the second guy at $5 million a year. But like not much more than that, and I think he's going to be in San Fran. You guys sound like spoiled fans and media heads after years of winning at the highest levels. So you can appreciate and respect and even like praise what the Astros did up to this point, and then also discuss how they get back to that. Like they're not mutually exclusive there. Taco Tuesday, lingua or babacoa? Where are you at on that, Joe? You want lingua or babacoa?
What's the first one?
Tongue.
Barbacoa.
All right, 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. I guess it's not your dad's AFC South anymore, huh? Duval, Jags, beat the Chiefs. How about that? Let's discuss.
Duval.
Monday Nighter last night. Was that Duval or Dupont?
It was Duval.
That was Duval.
Oh, my bad. 713-780-3776, Jeremy and Joe, Duval. ESPN 97.5. ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
We're taking a break.
Okay. That's cool.
To the Veritex Community Bank Studios with Jeremy Branham and Joe George.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Be less white, Joe. Lingua is just like a roast. If you cook it properly, you can eat it and not know the difference. Eric the buyer.
I mean, that's fair. I've never tried it, but I hear tongue and I say pass.
Yeah. All right.
Is that your go-to?
No. Oh. I would go babacoa for sure. But I mean, I'd like just a good little fajita. You know what I mean?
That's true.
Nothing wrong with that. We might talk tacos later. We'll see. It is a Taco Tuesday, National Taco Day. My invention, not LeBron's. How about this game?
Acknowledge me!
Chiefs, Jags. Jags get a massive victory.
I can't believe what we witnessed last night.
Can't either.
I mean, Trevor Lawrence is on the ground. He's on the floor. He's on the field. Laying down, got back up and scored. How is that possible? How did that play happen? I did not understand what happened last
night. Chris Jones decided not to play.
Like
that entire 2-minute drive might have been the worst quarterback play in a 2-minute drive that worked in the history of the game.
Yeah.
Like he ate a sack when he could have very easily thrown it away, where they had to waste one of their final timeouts. There was another bad play on that drive, almost through an interception. There was another bad play. I can't remember what it was. But it was like the most incompetent quarterback play in a two-minute drive, like super low S2E, and somehow it still worked.
It doesn't. I guess it's good coaching? Because
I think it's just luck.
Yeah.
I think it was good fortune. Now you have to be in that spot. Oh, he took a delay of game. Like, he was hard counting with 3 seconds left on the play clock. Like, what are you doing, Trevor Lawrence?
Yeah.
You idiot. You low S2 guy. But it worked. Like, somehow they were able to escape with a victory. Like, that was improbable. But I do think the Jags are pretty good.
Yeah, and the defense is what impresses me. And clearly Liam Cohen is a good coach already. They're doing things a little bit differently each way. They've got a ton of guys who are dropping the ball left and right, still out there. I wish they would make a decision on Travis Hunter, honestly, like which side of the ball he's going to play on. But they're a well-coached team. They're playing good football right now. You can't deny it.
They are. I think Brian Thomas might be hurt too. Like every single time if he drops a ball, he catches a ball, takes a hit, he's always like fidgeting at his wrist. Like I think there might be more to that injury than they're letting on. And the reason they're being like coy about it is because like, hey, defenders are going to take shots at his wrist. I actually think he is playing through an injury. I know that they didn't have him on an injury report early in the year, and then Cohen was like, oh, yeah, he's dealing with a wrist, and then he's been on injury report since. But just watching him, he's always, like, flexing and extending his hand. I think something's wrong with him.
Yeah, because they kind of made it sound like an excuse after week two before the Texans game, where it's like, oh, he's dropping all these because of his wrist.
Yep. But I do see him, like, fidgeting in his wrist. I think it's a legit injury that they're trying to, like, kind of hide.
Yeah, it seemed like an excuse at first, but now it seems more real.
Junkie on the text line, Mahomie talking the refs out of an offensive PI was par for the course. That was borderline. You get a yard. Like, I thought it was right on the fence. The Texans got called for that as well. It's Sunday, the Higgins one. But Higgins did go 3 yards up the field. I thought Higgins was legitimately running a route, but he screwed up by just stopping after the contact. Mm-hmm. I think if he would have just continued to run the route after the contact, I think they might have been able to avoid that one. Those are always very tricky to officiate. And you do get a yard. That was right on the fence.
Yeah, but the way that – and look, sometimes this is just the way it can be more of a byproduct of television. But you see Mahomes literally saying, you know, we get a yard, and then all of a sudden the penalty is overturned. Like, it doesn't look good while you're watching the broadcast. It does look like the Texans said that Mahomes convinced them to change it.
I'm okay with them talking about it, though. Because usually the flag comes from the back judge, and then they talk with the line judge about where the contact occurred. I know it doesn't look good. I understand the perception.
Yeah.
I agree about the perception. But I don't. I think they got that one right.
No, I know. I think they did too. Like you do get a yard. It looks like it was within that yard. So I am fine with it. And you should be able to have these discussions. Sometimes I think we need more of this, honestly, in sports, where you have them consulting each other, where just being like, yep, this ref's right, we're running with it. So I think it's the right call in the moment. Frankly, like it's a yard off the line of scrimmage. It's a totally legal play. So it's one of those where people are just going to complain about the Chiefs because they can complain about the Chiefs. But in the end, it didn't matter. They lost.
Yeah, and there was also a couple of flags that were called against them that hurt them late. Like you had the pass interference defensively, which was the right call. And then you had the holding, which negated Breshard Smith's pretty good return that could have put them in a better position.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I mean, the officials called stuff against the Chiefs. Shad Khan, owner of the Jags, he didn't say this last night. He said it earlier in the week. But I think Shad Khan's like a Nostradamus because so far he's been right.
This is what we envisioned in January, okay?
Yes, sir.
It's happening here in September. Gonna go on forever!
Yeah! Duval forever! I love Shad Khan. I wish
Duval.
I don't know which owner's cooler. I don't know if Cal McNair or Shad Khan is cooler.
Never quit.
Forever!
The voices on these guys are something. They both sound like cartoon.
It's always fun to win.
Man, the AFC South ownership group is next level. Like, find me an ownership group in a division that's better than the AFC South. You got Shad Khan, you got Cal McNair, you got Jim Irsay's daughter who's like has a clipboard and headphones on the sideline and like goes to practices, and then you have Amy Adams Stunk, who lives in Houston.
It's a good collection of people.
What do they call it? Like eclectic? It's an eclectic group of owners there. But is the AFC South good? I mean, the Colts are 4-1. The Jags are 4-1. The Texans are the best 2-3 team in the NFL. I don't know that to be true. I'm just throwing it out there for the sake of the argument. Titans stink. But is the AFC South good?
Yes.
I think it's good.
It's right now. It's the best division in football. It's the only division with 2-4-1 teams.
Do you actually believe that, though? Or are you just going off back of the baseball card?
Back of the baseball card right now.
On the back of his baseball card.
But the way Jacksonville's playing, the way that the Colts are playing, it's better than the top two teams in the East. It's definitely better than the top two teams in the North.
Colts, Jags, Bills, Pats.
I would go Jags over the Pats.
Would you?
Yeah. I think the two teams are both better than the Patriots right now. Obviously, neither are better than the Bills. But I think collectively they're both better than the Patriots.
If you win Jags, Pats in a neutral field, what's the number?
Probably like 3.
That high? Patriots, I think it's like a point and a half. Well, he doesn't think Patriots. He thinks Jags.
Jags would be the favorite?
Yeah, the way they're playing right now.
I'm surprised as much as you don't like Trevor Lawrence, you would take the Jaguars
I'm impressed with the Patriots. I think it's their defense. It looks so good.
Legit. I think it'd be like a point and a half game either way. How about Colts and Bills on a neutral?
Oh, well, that's Bills probably by 6 still, maybe 5.
Yeah. It might even be closer to a touchdown, maybe 6.5. Then how is the South better than the East?
Well, I think the two teams are both ahead of the Patriots. So I think that's what gives them the advantage.
Yeah, so like the duo, strength of the duo. Yeah. I think the West is a little underrated, right? Although the Jags beat the Chiefs yesterday, so you have scoreboard there. The Chargers are injured. The AFC South is good. I don't know how good. I don't know if they're the best division in the AFC. I'm not sure I would go there. But the AFC South is good. And the AFC North is what we thought the AFC South was going to be.
Yeah, the AFC North is not very good. I mean, with the Baltimore injuries that are happening right now.
They're the favorite to win the division.
Yeah, which is crazy to me still. I get it because people are not inspired by Pittsburgh. But to be 1-4 and still be favored to win your division seems far-fetched to me. But if you believe in it, Ben, this would be the best value you ever get to the Baltimore Ravens to win a division with Lamar Jackson as their quarterback.
The word you're looking for is eclectic. What did I say? Did I not say that? I think I said that.
I think you said eclectic.
Oh, okay. Did I put a P in there?
Yeah.
My bad. I like to do that with words. Texans will be favored over the Patriots on a neutral. That's a good point. Texans would be favored over the Patriots on a neutral field.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, maybe the AFC South is better than the AFC East, at least 1-3. Now, they don't have the peak, but 1-3, maybe they are.
And what's the difference between the Titans and the Jets?
Not much.
What's that game on a neutral field? Jets by 3?
Unwatchable.
No, I don't know if the Jets will be favored. Probably. Jets will probably be favored. Maybe like 2.5. But the Titans have more hope because they have like a quarterback that is actually like...
He's young.
That has hope.
Yeah.
Like you don't really... I mean, Fields is Fields.
Yeah,
you know?
He's been in the league for how long?
The Jets don't really have hope. That's the thing about them. Like the Jets would probably beat the Titans on a neutral field. But the Titans have hope. The Jets do not. The Jets have a first-year coach they probably aren't going to move on from in a quarterback who can't win games,
mm-hmm.
whereas the Titans have the number one pick who looks good, and then you're bringing in a new coach to pair with the number one pick.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say Cam Ward looks good. He has prospect. He has potential. He's got a chance. Kansas City falls to 2-3, same as the Texans, by the way. What's your panic meter for the Chiefs?
I think it's pretty low. I mean, the Broncos are playing really good defense right now, but the Chargers are out here. I mean, they're signing Nyheim Hines off their practice squad or to their practice squad today. Like, that's their solution at running back. They just made a trade for Odafe Owe, I think is how you say it, the Ravens edge rusher, a couple minutes ago. But, like, they're so beat up, the Chargers are. I wouldn't be panicking if I was the Chiefs.
Yeah, mine's like at a 3.5.
Yeah.
They could have very easily won that game yesterday. They're 3-2, and all things are well. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Mine's not that high on the
and, like, and like, while the Broncos have been playing well this year, the defense is good. It's just like, do you believe in Bo Nix? And the Chiefs' losses so far, I mean, they lost by less than a touchdown each of their games, so the Chargers, the Eagles, and the Jags. So those are right now all good teams. So I think the panic is pretty low. We'll see how they look against the Lions this weekend. But
that's a weird trade for the Ravens.
Yeah, they traded they got a safety in return.
And they signed C.J. Gardner-Johnson, too.
Yeah, which I think that means they're worried about. They got, I can't say this guy's name, Alohi Gilman.
Huh.
But that must mean, like, they must be like Kyle Hamilton's not coming back anytime soon.
Yeah, that must be the thing. Man, okay. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Quarter of the way through the NFL season, kind of. These Texans' 3 losses don't look that bad now, huh? 713-780-3776, Jeremy and Joe, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
This is ESPN 97.5, brought to you by Zadda Jewelers, KFNC, and 97.9 HD2 Mont Bellevue, Houston.